This is Phil Farron. And I am driving to the hospital. Not for me, thankfully. Well, I mean, thankfully. There's no good way around that one. So, not for me, thankfully. But Lynette's dad, my wife's dad, has been having some difficulties. And we thought had finally gotten a plan to get it taken care of. He's been having some difficulties since Thanksgiving. And he was in the hospital last week, I think. And so they put a stent in, liver, bile duct, gallbladder thingy stuff. And so they put in a stent, so that would supposedly all drain. Got home for a couple of days. It wasn't good. I still haven't fixed my brakes. because they run fine for a while, and then when I do the podcast, they squeak. I just don't know. I need to go get my brakes looked at. And they're still breaking, so, you know, when brakes break and don't break anymore, then it's time to get them fixed. But as long as brakes are breaking, then they're not really broke. Or as long as brakes are breaking, we can't really say that they're breaking. So he's back in the hospital this last week, and then they did another procedure, and then he was getting better, and then thought they were good, and now just today he's starting to get worse again on his bilirubin count and sadness. So I'm going to run down there and just say hey and be a little encouragement, and then head back home and do some writing. The writing is going fine. On book 6, I still have lots of pieces. I don't know how this is going to work out, but that's okay. We're moving forward. And, you know, move forward a little bit, and then, whoop, got to rewrite some stuff here, and then back. But vacation at the beginning of the week for Martin Luther King Day, that was a good day. So I plowed through 3,000 words, and so I'm good as far as word count goes now. I just have to kind of find my way through what's going on. Not only what's going on, but find my way through something exciting that's going on. But we will. It'll be fine. Step at a time. So this is week 2 of the writing sprint. It'll be a 7-week writing sprint. And I think I'm going to take another writing vacation in the split week between February and March. So, you know, it'll be good. Because last year I was behind. I was seriously behind. And that 1 week I think I put down, well, that 7-8-day stretch from Friday through to the next Friday and Saturday and Sunday, I put down like 21,000 words. So, you know, we're going to be fine. But it'll be interesting to see how this all gets worked out. I've got a couple of storylines that I'm not quite sure how they're going to work out. We'll see. Aside from that, all is well. Got some good work done this week at my main client. I'm building some infrastructure pieces for our new business process management system. And those are coming along good. We've got a bunch of little forms that we've got to convert, and so I ended up just building a little thing that we could point it at a table, and it would automatically build all the stored procedures for us, and then automatically build what's called a smart box for us, so we're ready to go and start putting a view on it and user interfaces on it. So that all went well, and I got one more little infrastructure piece that I need to build on Monday. And then, you know, we're going to need some, got a few conversations I need to have. But then once we get all those done, we're going to try our first project. Moving forward with our first project. So it'll be good. I think that's everything. I really just kind of have a short little article today. There was a bunch of other stuff that I've got queued up to talk about, including stuff that I promised I'd talk about that I haven't talked about yet. But I came across this little article, and it's nice. It's a nice little article. It has good things to say. And I especially like it when secular articles recommend the same thing that the Bible has been recommending for 2,000 years. So it's like, good job. Not to the Bible, to the researchers. Good job. Anyways, I came across this article, and the name of the article was Your Brain Has a Delete Button. Here's how to use it. So I thought, well, hey, this would be good. They were talking about that there's an old saying in neuroscience that neurons that fire together wire together. And they said that simply means that when you practice, things get better. You know, we all say practice makes perfect. Those of us who know a little better actually say perfect practice makes perfect. Because you can practice all day long, and if you're not practicing well, it ain't gonna help at all. One of my friends, he had a little girl. His little girl was taking piano lessons, and she figured out a new way to practice. She figured out that she could sit at the piano and look at the music she was supposed to be playing, and she could just look horizontally across all the music and find all the C notes, the middle C's. She found them all, and she counted them, and then she played them. Bong, 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 bong. Then she found all the E's, and she played them. Bong, 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 bong. Okay, that practice does not make perfect. She could do that all day long. She is not going to figure out how to play the song. Perfect practice makes perfect. But it does work. You know, when you keep working on it and working on it and working on it, you do certain things, you get better at those things. I mean, a couple of gals just ran past me. I'm going past MSU here on my way south. And I remember Lands, the first time I got out and started jogging around the neighborhood, I thought I was gonna die on the first little hill. But you know, you get up and down that little hill, and then you run some more, and then you run some more, and then you run some more, and there's a completely different thing that's going on in your brain after you've run some. And it's not just that you're getting physically more fit. There are actually things changing in your brain. Practice a skill, do a little yoga. You know, first couple of weeks, you're thinking, are you kidding me? There's no way that's going to happen. And then you just get a little more balanced, yada, yada, yada. So practice, practice, practice. All of those circuits get better. So there has been a lot of research about learning new things. But there's also been more research about, okay, how do we build and strengthen neural connections? Or how do we break down old ones? There's something that's called synaptic pruning. And it's very important. Synaptic pruning is very important because the brain actually goes through, much like a gardener would go through a garden and prune things back, the brain actually does this. So you've got all these synaptic connections between neurons, and it's across those connections that we get neurotransmitters like dopamine and serotonin traveling across it doing different things. If I'm pronouncing this right, we have glial cells that are the gardeners of the brains. So they act to speed up signals between certain neurons. But there are other glial cells that are actually waste removers. So in the article, it talks about them pulling up weeds, killing pests, raking up the dead leaves. These particular pruning gardeners are called microglial cells. So the question becomes, okay, well, how do they know what to clean up? Because, you know, you just don't want them going through there and just cleaning stuff up that they shouldn't be cleaning up. Well, researchers don't know exactly how yet, but they think that if you have synaptic connections that are getting used less, they get marked by a protein. C1Q. And when these microglial cells detect that, they bond to the protein and destroy or prune the synapse. And this stuff is going on all the time. In fact, this is how your brain makes the physical space that you need for it to make so that you can grow new and stronger connections so you can learn. Now then, okay, having said that, how do we encourage this process? Because it's very, very important for overall health. You all know the first one, sleep. You have to get enough sleep. Oh, was it last week, the week before last? I had several short nights in a row, and it was not good. I was just like in a fog. I thought, oh man, I gotta get some more sleep. And even today, I've been a little sluggish today because I had breakfast with a buddy at 6 this morning, which means I need to leave the house 5:45 or so, which means I need to get up at 5. And I didn't get in bed as soon as I should have. I wasn't in bed until, it was 10:15-ish or so. Because I like to get about 7 hours. I'm good. At 7 hours, I'm good. I pop awake at 7 hours, I'm good. But if I get a little less than that, I can feel it. So anyways, in this section where they were talking about sleep, they were talking about, do you ever feel like your brain is full? I kind of feel like my brain's a little full right now. He said, maybe when starting a new job or deep in a project, you're not sleeping enough. And even though you're constantly taking in new information, he said, well, actually, your brain is full. When you learn lots of new things, your brain builds connections, but they're inefficient ad hoc connections. Your brain needs to prune a lot of those connections and build more streamlined, efficient pathways. It does this when we sleep, which is amazing. It's just amazing. Your brain cleans itself out when you sleep, your brain cells shrinking by up to 60% to create space for your glial gardeners to come in and take away the waste and prune the synapses. Which, I had read another article on this, but there wasn't enough in there that I thought, oh, I can make a whole podcast out of it. But it really is an amazing system that your brain at night, like, gets smaller and then... It's something about, like, the blood vessels do double duty in the case of the brain. And so it's a very efficient design because you can get a lot more horsepower packed into a smaller area. It's very interesting. They ask the question, have you ever woken up from a good night's rest and been able to think clearly and quickly? Well, yeah. One of the things that's great about writing and then going back to something else and then writing and then going back to something else is countless times... I'm up against something and it's just like, what to do. And then I'll go to bed and I'll get up in the morning. It's like, ping, oh yeah, I could do that. Yeah, gotta have good sleep. The reason that happens, according to the article, is that you've got all this pruning and pathway efficiency that took place overnight left you with lots of room to take stuff in, synthesize new information, to learn. And they're also big in the article about napping. 10 to 20 minute nap gives your microglial gardeners the chance to come in and clear away some of the unused connections and leave you space to grow new ones. My wife would like this idea. And she said, oh, for me, laying down during the day, it just seems like, oh, I got so much stuff to do. I can't do it right now. Anyways, they claim that thinking with a sleep-deprived brain is like hacking your way through a dense jungle with a machete. It's overgrown, slow-going, and exhausting. The pathways overlap, light can't get through. Thinking on a well-rested brain is like wandering happily through Central Park. The paths are clear and connect to other paths in distinct spots. The trees are in place and you can see what's far ahead of you. It's invigorating. Okay, that's fine. The other thing that they suggest, and this is where we get to the article suggesting something that's suggested by the Bible 2,000 years ago, is being mindful of what you are mindful for. And this is really gets to the whole point of the article, which is your brain has a delete button. This is how we use it. And that is that we really do have some control over what our brain decides to delete while we sleep. They said it's the synaptic connections that you don't use that get marked for recycling, we think. The ones you do use are the ones that get watered and oxygenated. So be mindful of what you are thinking about. If you spend too much time reading theories about the end of Game of Thrones and very little on your job, quote, guess which synapses are going to get marked for recycling? Yeah. So what they're suggesting is that we really need to take advantage of the brain's natural gardening systems. Simply think about the things that are important to you. Your gardeners will strengthen those connections and prune the ones that you care about less. It's how you help the garden of your brain flower. Okay, so what's the Bible verse? If you haven't already gotten the Bible verse, Philippians 4:8. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. You know, it's a huge and important lesson. Do I want to talk about this or not? I actually have about 5 more minutes before I get down to the hospital. But it has been fascinating as I've been working on this book, Windfall Wheat and Tares, because it's such an important parable, and we don't like it at all. We just don't like this parable. Son of Man goes out and sows the good seed in the field of the world. And we know exactly what it means because Jesus interprets this parable. Son of God goes out and sows good seed. Children of God in the world. The enemy comes in behind it, sows bad seed. Sons of the evil one. And we've got a response to that. It's a very simple response. Well, we need to go get those bad seed out of there. That's our first response. And in fact, in the parable, that is the worker's response. An enemy has done this. Sowed tares. This apparently was something that arch enemies would do to each other from the commentaries that I have read. The real difficulty is that when the plants actually sprout, it's difficult to tell what's tares and what's wheat. And it's only when you get to harvest time that becomes clear. So the workers come to the landlord and they said, an enemy's done this. Shall we go through and try to pull it up and figure out? And he says, no, don't do that. Just let it all grow together. And later in the harvest, we'll separate it out at the end of the age. Yeah, we don't like this idea at all. We would just as soon rather be with our own kind. We would just as soon rather be in an environment that made us feel comfortable. This week, I have been in a few environments that might make some people comfortable, that made some people close to me more uncomfortable than me. But, you know, that's what we get into in things like the parable of the wheat and tares. We get into situations where we don't necessarily want to be around what we are around. But I'm firmly convinced that in those situations that God can give us grace and help us. And we can use those situations then as some kind of an opportunity for ministry. But sometimes it can be very difficult. Very, very difficult. So it's really, it's just fascinating to me that Jesus told this parable of the wheat and tares and made it just point blank, said it just like it is, that in fact, when we are in this world, there are going to be times when we are going to be influenced and pressured by those things that we aren't necessarily very happy about. But in those times, we have a choice of what we're going to think about. And this is where it comes back, because if we rehearse and we think and we revisit and gripe and grouse about what happened then and why did that have to happen to me, you know, it's just going to burn that stuff in deeper and deeper. But if we just find the things to think about in that situation that, like the Bible says, are good and just and honorable and noble and pure and admirable and excellent, and we dwell on those things, it just helps. It just helps a lot. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it to the hospital.